Hello, everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad you're here with us, and we're excited to have our guest tonight, Elaine Hall. Welcome, Elaine. We're so glad to have you here tonight.
Thank you, Peggy. Very excited to be here with you.
Yeah, we've got a great topic. We're going to talk about just religious education and instruction for children with special needs and how to make that more inclusive and adaptive for our kids, and not only just in places of faith, but also in our homes, and how to kind of mix that as well. And Elaine, you have some wonderful background, and so I want our audience to get to know you a little better. You have a little homeschooling in there with your special needs son, as well as you are the founder of the Miracle Project, which I love to talk about a little bit, and you're an author as well. So, so help us get to know you, and then we'll get started from there with questions. Oh, and also for our audience, if you want to interact with us while we're talking tonight, feel free to just put your comments, your questions up on the feed, and we will bring those into our conversation as we're talking in the next hour. So welcome again, Elaine.
Thank you. Thank you, Peggy. I'm so delighted to be here. And as I mentioned, when I first received your email, what was incredibly exciting to me was that we'd be bringing homeschooling, spirituality, and disability, and our children with, you know, different needs all together in one conversation.
Exactly.
And it's usually, you know, kind of splintered. So I'm just, you know, really thrilled and thrilled with everything that SPED Homeschool is doing. So just a little bit about me. I was a TV and film acting coach. I worked with the biggest and brightest stars. And I, but what I wanted more than anything was, and people called me Coach E, and for Elaine, Coach E. And but what I wanted was to be called Mama. And more than anything. And I wasn't able to give birth biologically. So I chose to adopt a little boy from an orphanage in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And Russia, because that's where my ancestry is. My grandfather is Russian, and he was actually an orphan in Russia.
Oh.
And so I just felt like if I couldn't bring his beautiful gray eyes and have, you know, a genetic connection, I would have a soul connection. And really, that's what, that's really what my son, the second that my eyes met his eyes, it was as if, as my mom, my dear mom would say, he was waiting for me.
Wow.
So he was 2 years old. And, he basically ran into my arms, and we bonded, mother, child, child, mother, and I couldn't have given birth in any other way to have it be so profound. So I come from a very strong, thank you, I come from a very, very strong religious background. My grandfather's family was had been, I have generations from my grandparents, both my grandfather and grandmother of rabbis and leaders, and on that side of my family. And my grandfather had just a real spirit about him that I just I remember sitting at his feet and just feeling his connection to something greater than himself. And when my grandfather passed away, he looked up and he said, "Saul," my dad, he says, "Is this God?" And then closed his eyes and left. So my spiritual life, and I'm adding that in, has always been very important to me. And so I brought my son home, and he spun around in circles and stared at his hand for hours at a time and flapped. And today for our you would know, what is that, right?
Right. But yeah, I've got a son around that age, and I understand. We didn't know all that stuff then.
We didn't know. So all I knew was he was my son.
Right.
And a traditional therapist for him. the diagnosis of autism, severe autism and apraxia, non-speaking. Okay. And I had people tell me to send him back to Russia.
Yeah.
And I am, but my own belief, my knowingness in the higher power and my own spiritual connection knew that that he was my child and we were in this together. Exactly. And he became, you know, that really, as our kids are, right? My greatest teacher, definitely my greatest teacher.
Definitely.
Yeah.
If we allow them to, and that's, I think, the key, is allowing that education to happen.
Yes.
So too often we oppose it and we don't want to change as much as our kids require us to.
Yes.
And it does take a lot of faith, you know, to let go of some of the things that we maybe were holding on to that we're maybe calling idols too.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And well, part of that was letting go of my dream, my vision of what my life would be, you know,
right.
Soccer mom,
you know, exactly.
You know, having him sit next to me in synagogue and, you know, all of these things that I thought that was what my life was going to be. And grieving that, really, grieving that, really, because people say, you know, did you grieve when you found out he had autism? It's like, not really. He's still my son.
Right.
But I had to grieve my dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I had to say goodbye to those dreams and allow new ones to emerge based on based on who I was given to love. And I think also it's ironic because I mean I've been working with children my whole life. And I was known as the child whisperer and, you know, renowned acting coach for children. And there's actually now a YouTube on me, how I make babies cry and get them to stop crying, which is hilarious. But, you know, here I am, you know, renowned in this way. And I'm gifted with a child that doesn't speak, that is seemingly in his own world, and as we know with our children, they're not really in their own world.
Oh no. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
They just interact with our world very differently.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what I chose to do, is to enter his world and learn how he perceived the world. And when, you know, when I did that, it opened me up to this incredible world, this phenomenal world that, you know, we all know now, that's so deep and so rich and alternative.
Yeah, definitely.
And yet it profound.
Stretches us. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So I started learning everything I could about autism, and I trained with some of the best, you know, Dr. Stanley Greenspan, Dr. Barry Prezant, just reading everything I possibly could and training my theater friends, actors, singers, dancers, how to understand autism.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm.
And helping them learn how to join my son's world as he slowly emerged into our world.
Yeah.
And what I did is I created a homeschool for him in my, I was married at the time, so I had this big, huge house with the playroom, and I created a homeschool in this playroom, and we followed his lead. Whatever he needed to do, we would follow it. And sometimes it would change, you know. Sometimes he needed to blow bubbles for hours and days, and so we'd blow bubbles with him, and gradually emerging into being able to develop curriculum based on who he was. He liked to throw things, so we taught him his ABCs by writing big letter A's on a piece of large poster board, and then having him throw, you know, bean bags at the letter A, and then tracing it with his body and making it with his body, and just, you know, exploring and creating our own homeschool for him to be able to be himself in. And gradually he emerged into our world. And still autistic, still non-speaking, but happy and connected.
Right. And the guy that I interviewed last week, that seemed to be the, you know, the thing that I think we struggle with so much with our kids on the autism spectrum, and especially those that are nonverbal and have a hard time, you know, bridging that communication gap. If we as parents can do whatever we can to bridge from our side, that it does bring them in. It draws them in, and it allows them to relate to us and understand that we care. They just don't get that connection until we make that effort. And it is a lot of effort because it's guessing, it's trying, it's, you know, failing a lot.
Yes. And the same thing, you know, because, you know, so many of us career women or whatever, we're used to being, you know, failure. Oh my gosh, you know, we're used to having those successes, right? Mm-hmm. And learning that success could be that we connected and how beautiful that connection is. And
it's about relationship. It's not about a to-do list where you just check things off and, you know, like a curriculum. Yeah, we finished this and this and this, and now we're good. You can't see it, but you feel it. And that's important.
So right on. Exactly. It's about that connection. And he started to be able to go to school, regular school, mainstream, with support, obviously.
Yeah.
And I started back to work and created, which is now known as the Miracle, you mentioned it, which is a theater and film program for all abilities. It's fully inclusive. We bring the typical world into our world. So
I love that.
Yeah, and they get to explore like what we've done with our children. Mm-hmm. We have everything from 12-year-old, we call them co-actors, not volunteers, to 60-year-old co-actors that join our world and get to know and understand from our perspective.
Right.
And we create a theatrical community, and we do music and dance and acting, and there's been a film made about it called Autism Musical. And so that's been my career, part of my career journey as a result of
I think the parents that I talk to and interview, it's so much our worlds change with our children, and they become more beautiful because of it. And, I look back and think, if I would have followed that track and let my kids, you know, just do whatever and not gotten into their world, yeah, I'd be really successful right now, but I'd be miserable.
Yeah. That's it.
And it's such a filled life that I've been given.
Yes. Yes. Well, like what you said, it's the true success.
Mm-hmm.
It's the true because it's complete. You know, it's like what you said, it's full. I mean, I feel more successful today than I ever did when I was working on A-list movies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we all have that blessing. That blessing.
Definitely.
That not without challenge, obviously.
Oh no we can't diminish that side either, but definitely it's like those hidden gems. I mean, you can definitely have to dig for them, and they are more precious because they've taken a lot of work to find.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
you know, I look at kids and I wouldn't trade it.
Yes.
And I'm sure you wouldn't either.
No, not at all. And you know, throughout my journey, my marriage ended. I became a single mom, moved from my big house into a little teeny place, and started over and kind of to reinvent with Neil as really my guiding compass, and knowing that I had to be happy, healthy, spiritually sincere and connected so that I could be the best for him. And I'm sure you talk about this all the time, you know, on sped homeschooling, where I learned how important it was for self-care.
Yes.
And my own, I meditate, and, you know, daily, and my yoga and my spirituality. And I had to be, especially as a single mom, as strong as I possibly could be so that I could be the best support for my son.
Right.
And I think
we so often don't, when we get that that craziness in our life. Actually, I did a devotional this morning based off of Exodus. Mm-hmm. And just how, you know, God made the Israelites stop twice a day, even when they were moving, to worship him in the morning, to worship him at night. And that was purposeful. No matter if they had to pick up camp, that sacrifice still had to happen twice a day, you know. And I was sharing with my audience, I have my own channel for that, but mm-hmm. just how we need to be purposeful.
Yes.
About making that time.
Yes.
Because no matter what we put in our day, if we don't focus on what matters most, first and last, it will never happen.
That's so right. Oh, I feel so aligned with that. And, you know, it's really our being purposeful about it. I mean, for me, if I don't meditate, it's as if I haven't brushed my teeth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel, you know, I'm leaving the house without something on. And it's so, you know, and what you said, it just resonates in that our connection to whatever we call God, a higher power, a connection to the force, that energy source, whatever that is for each individual, that connection is primary. Mm-hmm. That all other things evolve. And I often, you know, realize that the same energy that makes the tree grow and the flowers bloom is what I'm made out of. And mm-hmm. when I separate out from that, or I'm too busy to tune into that, my branches are dying and I'm disconnected from my source. And that the cleaner, more connected I can be to my source, my work in the world is better. But my relationship with my son is better. And he's an incredibly spiritual person, incredibly spiritual. And I know, you know, we have some thoughts about that later I can share on, but
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, it's so good to get to know your story and you know, it's that our story is us, and it's what drives us to do what we do. And, you know, and as we've been talking about this, you know, you've been talking about how your faith life is so integrated into everything that you do.
Yes.
And oftentimes we sometimes see families that, you know, they don't know what to do when they have this child who's like, you know, their world they can't get into, and yet they have these strong beliefs. And, you know, how do we, as parents, go about expressing to our children and including them into those family dynamics that sometimes we struggle with to even give to typical children in our homes.
Yes.
And yet it should be something that we even strive to for our children that maybe cognitively can't always grasp as well as typical children. Do you have anything to share with our families about that?
Yeah, that's such a great question. And I see it on so many different levels. I mean, one of the things that's really I found is I presume intelligence.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good perspective.
And knowingness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my son is a typer. He types to communicate. And he types about God. He asks why God made him mute. And he feels like he was brought to this world for a purpose.
Hmm.
And he challenges God, but he's so connected to God.
Right.
And I think, you know, in my tradition, we have the Shema, which is, and it's part of it is the prayer, and the Shema is about hear, O, the Lord is one, the Lord is our God. That's basic what it is. But it's about listening and hearing. And then the second part of that is teach your children.
Yes.
Teach them when their walk is by the way, when they're lying.
Mm-hmm.
Teach their children. So incorporating the teaching of, it's not just, okay, we're going to, you know, on Sunday or Saturday, we're going to relate to God. But no, every moment is a God-infused moment.
Right.
And we thank, you know, we thank, you know, God of our understanding, and for everyone has their own individual experience, for our food, for our warmth. And every night we say, I would sing a prayer to my son every single night. And there's a bedtime prayer in our tradition where we surround with the angels. We're surrounded by angels to watch over us as we're sleeping. Yeah. And so I would sing that to my son every night, and just allowing him to connect to the spirit that I connect to, but in his way, in his own way. And I think that's part of it, is that we think that religion has to be something exactly like how we were taught as children, where it can be a conversation. It can be just as homeschooling is individualized for every single child, our relationship to our creator can be adjusted. And, you know, we teach our children in the way that they are meant to learn. And so allowing their intelligence to come through. I created a religious education program when Neil was 12 years old. In our tradition, we have a bar mitzvah or a bat mitzvah for girls, and which is a coming of age, a passage of coming of age ritual. And well, actually, I'll talk a little bit more about rituals too in a minute. But there was really no place for him to have this ritual, so I assumed it would be one of those things I have to kind of grieve and not have it happen. And miraculously, I got a phone call from a large nonprofit organization that said they had been given a grant to develop this religious education program, and they couldn't find anybody to do it, you know, for individuals with autism. And I said, well, look, I just created a theater program. There's a movie about me. You know, I can train rabbis, and, you know, just like I train my staff, I can train rabbis in understanding autism. And I created a full program called Nes Gadol. And basically it was bringing the tradition to the young people in a way that they could learn.
Right.
In a way that they could understand, but reaching to their highest level of intelligence. And I found that the same kids who would kick and bite and scream in their, you know, mainstream day school or whatever would come and share about God, about gratitude, about taking care of the earth, about love, of being together. And we created this dynamic community, and not by dummying down the information, by really elevating, elevating.
And you assume, like you said, you assume their intelligence, and so often people don't. And we see this, you know, parents come to us all the time and they're like, my child can do so much more than the schools are expecting out of them. And it does it. It infuriates them, whether they can express it or not. And they express it however they can.
Yes.
But when you do, I mean, that's community. That's love, you know, in a way that shows them that they're important and valued.
Yes. Valued. That's exactly it. They're valued. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And it's challenging because I couldn't bring my son to synagogue. I mean, he was too loud. He'd run around. So I started bringing my friends. Friday night to Saturday. And I started bringing my friends to my house, creating dinners together, potluck dinners. And I would bring in an older, like a high school kid, to help hang with the kids, and we would, in our world, create our own community.
Oh.
And so that I felt safe and my son felt safe, and then I would give myself opportunities to where someone would hang with my son at home so I could go get the sustenance that I got needed from my congregation. So there was ways of balancing it.
I love that word, balance.
Yes.
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 I mean, you can only ask your child to go so far. And, you know, what you're saying is, you know, we did what we could outside, but we also took ownership of what we could do inside our home.
Yes.
And we brought the community to us versus just expecting the community to adapt to us.
That's right.
I love that. That takes on a whole new perspective of faith and sharing that, and also sharing our child's disability and the struggles that we go through as families.
Yes.
With community. And we need that support, whether they have special needs children or not. So often we hear from people that, you know, if I only knew what you needed, you know, mm-hmm. and by developing the community like you're talking about, that is how we share what we need.
That's right.
Because they see it.
That's right. And they're part of it.
And yes.
They're part of it and integral part of it. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah. And in creating that community, we provided supports for each other, and they're almost like my son's cousins, but you know, the children who were 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years old when we were doing all this, well, today they are the ones whose best friends have disabilities, who advocate for mm-hmm. other kids with disabilities, who are leaders in the community. And so it's like we are being of service to our future by bringing them into us.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, we're not segregating them out. I remember when I'm the oldest of 14, so my parents have adopted 10 of my siblings have special needs and are adopted. And I remember the awkwardness of adjusting to having my siblings who were completely almost bedbound. They had severe disabilities, and just the transition and how lovely that picture is now for me, having had siblings for that long now. I love how you say assume intelligence, because I was telling my guest last week too, this, that one of my sisters that was adopted had only a brainstem. And my parents went through classes on how to enter her world and do eye communication. And what she understood, no one had any concept of what was going on inside her. And just the calmness that came over her when she realized, they understand me. I can communicate. And so, you know, and really, you know, just to hear their depths of faith, their depths of desiring just to be understood, to be known. We dismiss that because all we see on a first impression is the difficulties.
Yes. Yes. Oh, what an incredible way to grow up. Your parents must be remarkable people.
I'm actually going to help them. I've set up a nonprofit when I go to Minnesota in April, because they're getting into their 70s and they still have 5 kids at home.
Wow.
We have to figure out a transition plan for them.
They'll
be around for a while, but their health is starting to fail.
Yes. No, of course. Amazing. Amazing. But yeah, exactly. For your sister to... Well, for your parents to take that extra effort, and for your sister to be seen and known, mm-hmm. and I mean, reality is that's what we all want.
Yes.
How many people go through life and feeling that no one really understands them, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And so it is to, you know, that St. Francis is, you know, seek first to understand, then to be understood,
mm-hmm.
and I feel that it has developed that spiritual muscle in me. My son mm-hmm. has developed that spiritual muscle that's now just how I walk into any room. But it was perhaps dormant, but now mm-hmm. is where I lead from. And I think that's another thing where, you know, our kids are our teachers, you know?
Yes.
From that. Yeah.
That's very true.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have in our families a lot of faith stories, traditions, and rituals that we do that are part of our faith. What are some ways that you've seen you've been able to adapt or accommodate those based on how your son understands them? And then, you know, as you've built them into other inclusive type programs, how do you approach that, I guess, even as a parent?
Yeah, it's such a great question. And rituals are really important. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, everything we do really is a ritual. From getting up in the morning, brushing teeth, yes. right? So yes. it's kind of what is the intention behind it.
That's and, a good point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that if we hold the action and make that more important than the intention, that's yes. where there's a split, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I think the most important thing, or just the first thing, not the most important, is to what is our intention? And if our intention is to be closer to God and to be closer to God with our children,
mm-hmm.
then it's how we show up doing whatever it is that we do.
Right.
And if we show up with a sense of, oh my God, they're not going to get it right and I'm going to get embarrassed or whatever, we're creating stress and we're disconnecting from our source.
Yes, so true.
Yeah, and if we show up with this sense of curiosity, wonder,
mm-hmm.
connection, relationship is our primary focus, then anything can happen.
Yeah.
So
it just opens yeah. the windows, definitely. I love that.
Yeah, so that's kind of, I have my first book is called Now I See the Moon, and it's my how I developed the religious education program and the Miracle Project. And my second book is called The Seven Keys to Unlock Autism. And it actually turns it on its head. It's not about unlocking autism. It's about unlocking others' way of being in the world that prohibits our kids with autism to be who they are. And the first step is that intention, that intention.
Mm.
So the second step is appreciation. And appreciating our challenges as well as our joys. So perhaps one of the rituals can be, I mean, you know, we do Friday night, but one of the rituals is appreciating each other on a really beautiful level, like making that ritual part of what we do.
Right.
And then a third is, I won't go through them all, but a third is understanding the sensory system. So when are we walking into a synagogue, a congregation, or a mosque, and it's too loud, it's overwhelming, exactly. there's too much going on. And so forcing our child to be in something that sensorily is mm-hmm. harmful, is painful.
Right.
So in the fourth and fifth step, but the sixth step is, we call it practice makes progress.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. So, instead of perfection.
So well said.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a process.
It's a process. And so what we do is what I created with the religious education program, and I got it from a small synagogue service at a large synagogue at Beth Am. They had a small contained synagogue service,
mm-hmm.
and we took it to another level where we created a religious education program that we explored all the rituals. I mean, when you think about it, going into a synagogue or a church or a mosque, you know, just the fact of stand up, sit down, bow, right. do this, that's a lot of choreography, you know?
It definitely
and
is.
What's going on? I mean, especially with our kids with motor planning and sequencing challenges, right?
Yes.
And what is, and strange words and sounds and Latin and Hebrew and what is all this? And and so we break it down into small, manageable, understandable, meaningful parts.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In a reverse inclusion, we bring the typical world, same thing I do for Miracle Project, into a small contained environment. And we take time to explore it, where the senses are not overloaded, where it's not too loud, where there's not too many people giving that, you know, what's it called, the stink eye, you know, giving us dirty looks. We've all had those, right? So we do it in a place where all they're seeing is love and encouragement and oneness together.
Right.
And we break it down in a small contained environment, and then slowly, inch by inch, showing up at a service, maybe a quieter service, maybe a smaller service, maybe a service, I mean, it really starts at the top with the clergy, maybe at the top where the clergy are so open and curious I mean, I do trainings in faith-based organizations all over the country. And I have a whole like a program of, you know, how to be more inclusive. And one of the things people always say to me, well, it's so expensive to be inclusive. Right? They say, it's too expensive, you know? And I tell them, okay, for 10 seconds, I want you to look around the room at everybody and look at them with judgment, fear, anxiety, and just look at everybody and see how you feel inside. And then let that go. And then 10 seconds, look at each other with curiosity, love, and joy, as if we're all made in the image of God. So for 20 seconds, we have created an inclusive community.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not so much training our kids how to sit. It's more about training the community.
It truly, truly is.
To embrace us.
I know. One of my team members came to me and she said, so my church wants to make an inclusive program. They said, I have this money and I have this room and they want me to fill it with toys. And I'm like, and she's like, that isn't what we're supposed to be doing. But I mean, that's the perspective, is we can just take care of them over here. But that, I mean, I love what you're saying is, you know, we have to change. We have to enter their world and we all have to do it in community. Yes. And embrace these children, these families.
Yes.
Because I can't tell you, and I mean, I know you hear it too. We have no place to go.
Yes.
We have this faith, but we don't have a community that will allow us express it.
That's right.
And that just has to change.
It does. It's heartbreaking because who needs it more than a recently diagnosed mom?
Exactly.
Who needs to be able to find a place? What we talk about is it's different than include. We're not about creating inclusion. We're about creating belonging.
Yes, exactly.
I belong to my place of worship. I'm not included there. And
right.
When you do create these small little programs, it's a first step, it's a step, but there's not belonging.
Right, it's not where you're left to stay. You know,
it's a beginning.
It's a beginning. It's the steps that are needed in between that maybe most typical people just leap over, or they struggle with it inside and don't show it. You know, there's so many of us that just, you know, say, well, I don't get what this tradition is all about, but I'll just kind of play by the rules and do it. And then later God gets our heart or, you know, we finally figure it out. But for kids that are much more sensitive, that they can't make that leap and hide their disintegration of those things.
Which makes them our prophets.
It truly
because
does.
What is religion about? Getting to our own core vulnerability, our own sensitivity, our own truth. All those rituals were done in order to have a place for us to connect to something greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
And so when we're really in tune with that, and you know, we're talking about appreciating the families with disabilities, but it's even, and I talk about this a bit in my book, is that it's not a shameless plug, but but to be helpful to, you know, to people is that what we want to tell people to be appreciative of our kids, and that's a good step, but our kids aren't charity, right? So
exactly.
what I always like to do, and when I do my faith-based trainings, and you know, I'm brought into synagogues and churches, and but when I do these trainings, it's not even about accepting the person with special needs. It's about accepting those dark parts of ourselves.
Yes.
So that we connect to our own sense of shame, our own disconnect. Because I really feel we can profoundly love our own vulnerabilities and our own, you know, OCDs or, you know, whatever we have,
exactly.
Right?
Yep.
We love that in ourselves. There isn't that projection of someone else as an other. There's a sense of we're all in this game of life together, and we don't have to put on the best suit and think that we've got it all together, because none of us have it together.
None
even the person
do.
Looks the most together, right?
Right, and they're usually the one who is the least together.
Yes, that's
we,
right.
I mean, about, you know, these celebrities and committing suicides, you can put on a nice facade for a week or so long. But everybody is hurting. And we need community to help us to heal.
Yes.
And yeah, and that makes it hard because with families with children who struggle, they need it all the more.
They need it all
and
the
our
more.
Our children do, definitely.
Yeah.
And you know, we know that kids on the autism spectrum, relationships are the hardest thing. But does that mean we stop working at them? Just because
that,
they're hard.
That and also finding our tribe, finding like-minded people. I mean, I can share with you some video of our kids with the Miracle Project and my religious education program. They're hugging. They're hanging out together. You can't tell who has special needs, who has autism, who has what, because they're all they're it's a creative, dynamic community. They're cheering each other on because they're in an environment with others. They don't feel left out. They don't feel alone. They feel like exactly like your sister. They feel seen. Mm-hmm. They feel heard. They feel a part of. There's neurotypicals with our disabled, you know, non-disabled with disabled, it's a mix. And the relationship is profound. The relationships they have with each other are profound. Now, then they'll sometimes go into the typical world outside and they'll be very quiet and very reserved. But then they'll come into our world and to the Miracle Project and they're laughing and talking and they won't stop talking because they feel safe.
That's a very good point. Safety, safeness is so key to being open to anything, you know, even just learning in general, but so much more for our faith, because it does require our heart to be engaged as well. And you do, you need a safe place. And I love that you do theater. I mean, that's how my middle child started connecting with life. I mean, We did so much school with costumes on, I can't even tell you.
Oh, it's fabulous. Yeah, it's a great equalizer. It's wonderful. Yeah. And we also use a lot of that in our religious education program. Mm. We use music. We use movement. We act out the Bible stories. We act out the prayers. We do sign language. We embody the stories.
Right.
So we use theater in that same kind of way as a form of expression. And we do art projects that are meaningful. I mean, I'm so tired of people giving kids with, you know, apraxia, and, you know, they have challenge with motor, fine motor skills, like kindergarten, you know, projects when they're high school and adult.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, let's do something meaningful. Let's make, you know, a dream box, you know, where you can collage all your dreams, or let's, you know, make candlestick holders that you can use on you know, Friday nights. So making things really meaningful, everything making it meaningful, you know, the rituals meaningful, and including our belief and our prayer and part of our whole daily life.
Yeah,
and when we say the meal is, you know, we say, you know, and he says it now, he types and he actually leads services. He does the sermon. Because he types first at home, and then a congregant reads it in front of.
Oh, that's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that, I mean, he has a perspective that, you know, the world needs to hear.
Yes.
And I'm glad they're hearing.
Yeah.
You know, that so often our kids aren't heard.
Yes. Exactly.
And it's nice to see, you know, that there's people on the autism spectrum now that are writing books and, you know, coming out of, you know, just saying this, you know, this is just the way I view the world. It doesn't make it wrong. And I, you know, I always struggle with though, with my boys, you know, my oldest, of course, being on the autism spectrum, and he had things that he struggled with. And I would say to him though, you know, God drew the line here of what is right and what is wrong. Some things you do much easier and some things are much harder. It doesn't mean the law has changed, you know, but it just means that we need to find ways to adapt to meet where God has set the standard.
Yeah.
And I think we can do that by aiding our children in the ways that they have deficits, helping them to, you know, to fill in those gaps, but yet also to use their talents like your son.
Yeah.
And to give the world a perspective from where they are gifted too.
Yes. I think that that is essential, is to give them a voice of letting them share their passion. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you see it in theater, and you know, we have kids in the Miracle Project who literally came to us rolling on the floor, crying and screaming. Mm-hmm. We're now one girl, as she said, opera came out of her mouth one day, and she's an opera singer. I brought her to China with me, and she's on the TV show Atypical. Mm-hmm. So our kids are now getting professional careers when they used to be, you know, so shy they couldn't even speak.
Right. Yeah. It just, it takes encouragement.
Yes.
And, you know, our kids get told so much that they can't do stuff.
Yes.
And giving them the opportunity of things that they can do, and letting them know that they were created for a purpose, you know, and I think that's where our faith is so important. You know, I always told my boys, I'm like, you know, it's, you have your struggles, but you have your gifts too. Mm. And we need to embrace those, because God has you here for a reason.
That's beautiful. So beautiful. You know, you know, I think, you know, the kids hear what they can't do, but then so do we as parents. We hear so much of what our kids can't do, right?
That beats us down.
Yeah. And how important it is to trust our own inner voice. Because our own inner voice knows the truth.
So true. Yes.
Right?
When we start feeling anxious and we start pushing, and that's when the world is crowding into our mind and saying, your child needs to do this. They need to achieve this. And that's really not where you're supposed to be.
Right? Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And how important it is that we support each other during those times, you know. That's another thing with spirituality that I learned is I was always the helper, as so many of us are.
Yeah.
But when I was a single mom and, you know, child with severe autism, I had to ask for help.
Yes.
And I'd go to God first, help. And then, you know, he would send someone. It's, you know, there's like that story where a man falls off a boat. You know, this story, a man falls off a boat. And the captain of the ship sends him a life raft.
He says,
"No, I'm waiting for God to help me." And then they send him like a rowboat out there, and he's like, "No, I'm not getting in. I'm waiting for God to help me." And and then they send a helicopter. "No, I'm waiting for God to help me." And then he drowns, and he goes to heaven. He meets his maker, and he says, "You know, where were you? You know." And God said, "Well, I gave you a lifeboat, and I sent you a helicopter." And I think that's it. It's like there's all these ways that are around us for help. And we have to be willing to just ask or get on that lifeboat or, you know, climb up that ladder, the helicopter, and be it's like humbling ourselves to God.
I was just going to say that. It's humbling. But yes. We aren't meant to be, I mean, we got to lose our pride.
Yes.
And our kids help us do that so well.
Oh, yeah.
But the sooner we do it, the more beneficial it is for us and our child.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. So, I guess we've got about 10 minutes left.
Oh my gosh.
It goes fast. I always get off with people after we've had our conversation. They're like, "Wow, I didn't know an hour could go so quick."
Yeah. Wonderful.
But so you've been involved in a lot of the programs your son has been in. And, you know, I think as parents, we need to realize that there always isn't going to be a program, and searching and searching and searching, it may be a dead end, and that we have to just get involved. Mm-hmm. And that's hard when we're tired, but yet I've heard through your story, you know, just how fruitful it has been in your life to be on that end as well. Mm-hmm. For parents who do have programs that their kids can get involved in, how do they become a co-teacher with the people that are working with their kids. How have you liked, as parents have been involved in your program, for them to help their kids at home and to help your program? I mean, what are some things that parents can do to just boost that?
It's such a great question. One of the things is we encourage the parents to come to class, but to stay in the hall.
Okay.
And then they connect with each other.
Yeah.
We have once a month positive, like organized positive parent support groups.
Mm.
And they're positive groups where we talk about something funny our child did. And you know, and then what happens is the parents become so connected with each other.
Right.
And that carries home, because when we fill ourselves up, we're full. Mm-hmm. Another thing we do is we practice the seven keys with our parents.
Okay.
So when a parent comes to me and they're complaining about their child and, you know, they're not getting the grades that they need and they're not then I will kindly and gently reframe that. Well, tell me something they are doing.
Oh, that is good. Mm-hmm.
And then I invite them as their homework to be that way with their child when they get home.
Yeah.
Remind them, catch them doing something that, and come from an I place of like, I mean, we learn connection and relationship through others. So you just say, I really appreciate it, how you helped me out tonight with the dinner plates.
Right, they mimic. And if we aren't giving a good example, we can't expect it in return. We're going to get what we give and what we model.
Yeah. And I think also what you said is we can't expect it in return. I think that's something that is sometimes hard, not to be at all sexist, but I hear a lot from, you know, I consult with moms and dads all over the country, and I hear more from dads that they want something from their child, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have to shift that. Want nothing.
Yeah.
Want and need nothing.
Our children were brought into this world to give us things.
Right.
We were meant to care for them.
Right.
Yes.
And replenish from our higher power. Replenish from whatever it is that fills you up. Replenish from, you know, and then take those little, I like to say what's one small step for a neurotypical kid is a giant leap for our kids.
Yeah.
You know, and like my son, before he goes to bed, goes,
oh.
And that just fills me up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, take those little morsels. It's like fine chocolate. You don't need a lot of it.
Right.
You know, you just need a little bit and you just go, oh, so good.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we can do, is really cherish those little moments and not think we're going to get filled up by our children.
Yeah.
And make sure that we're full, that we're full. And the other is really follow their interests. I mean, my son has become an organic gardener, which I have a, you know, brown thumb. And he has a job.
That's a gift.
Yeah, he has a job working in an organic garden. And because of him, nothing to do with me, because of him, the program has started a whole disability program. He's a leader. I mean, but it's not me doing it for him. It's because he loves that. So finding what your child is natural at.
Yes.
And encourage that, develop that, let it grow into, you know, into, let it blossom.
Mm-hmm.
That may be completely different from who you are. I mean, I am definitely not a gardener. So, and he types, he feels God's hands working through his hands when he's working. And so, you know, I think that's really important for parents, is just be on the lookout. And the way we found out, it's because he likes to catch bees and smell them.
Really?
No, doesn't get stung.
Wow.
Doesn't get stung. And we started going on a path of helping him, thinking he'd be a bee, you know, keeper.
Right.
And then we saw that he loved the flowers. So it was the flowers that he loved. And then just going, you know, following that lead from him and then learning that he loves gardening. So I think look at the little clues and cues that our children are giving us.
They are clues and cues. Yes, perfect wording for that.
Yeah. So,
Yeah, definitely. It's, it takes on a whole different perspective when we, and I was moderating a discussion panel yesterday. It was kind of all the panelists were saying to the parents, and most of them were new to homeschooling. Excuse me. Just that one of your main jobs, especially as a homeschooler, because you have your kids home all the time, is become a student.
Yes.
Of your child.
Oh, I love that.
And
become a student of your child.
The possibility of homeschooling allows you to teach where your child is bent on learning. And I've seen that as I've embraced that dynamic and freedom of homeschooling, and how wonderful that has made that whole progress and with my own kids, because they would never have been able to explore the things that they've explored if they would have been in a classroom.
Yes.
Every day.
So I was just thinking that's such a beautiful segue, because the same thing about our religious rituals.
Mm.
It's the same thing, you know. Let our children be our ministers. Let them be our teachers, and just like we came from a whole new exploration of schooling and learning, we become students of a new way of practicing our faith.
That is, yes. And we get in our mind, this is the way it was meant to be.
Right.
And I've had to take a step back sometimes from my traditions and say, was that really how it was intended?
Yes.
And, you know, going back to what you were talking about before, what is the purpose behind this? Why
yes.
are we doing this? Is adapting it this way really taking away the purpose? Or is it just taking away my ideals of what it should look like?
Right. Like getting to the true essence of how it all started.
Right. Exactly.
It's almost mystical.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And our kids do. They make us take a step back, I think. And they give us a better perspective of the world, because we are so tunnel visioned about what it should look like. And you know, you go to other parts of the world and they practice the same faith we have in a very different way.
Right.
So does it make what they're doing wrong? And no, it doesn't. So, yes, it's just a whole bunch of different worlds here in our homes that will give us that perspective too.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Elaine. This has just been an awesome discussion. I have truly enjoyed our interaction. I'm not sure if Facebook's comments have been working, because sometimes they don't. And we could have comments that we completely miss. So if you have been commenting and liking, I am completely sorry, but we have not seen them. I will respond back when I get onto my computer later to see the Facebook feed. But we filled the hour anyways, so it didn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely, where can people find your books?
Okay, so
sure that...
here's one book. It's called Now I See the Moon.
Yes.
And, it's on Amazon.
Okay.
Now I see the Moon. The other book is called The 7 Keys to Unlock Autism.
Okay.
You can also get it on Amazon. And the film is called Autism the Musical.
Yes. And that was HBO.
Yeah, it's on HBO. Yeah, they're going to maybe streaming it again, but right now it's only on DVD.
Okay.
For anyone who still has a DVD player. I can be reached. I can be reached at Coach E at CoachEProductions.com.
Great.
Or on Facebook, Elaine Hall.
Yeah, and we have, if you go to the event for this broadcast too, it talks to the Miracle Project as well into your organization.
Oh, wonderful.
So
thank you.
To find you that way as well.
Wonderful.
So, yes. So thank you so much again, Elaine. Totally appreciated this conversation. And for those of you that are watching, we're going to be putting this on our YouTube channel on Sunday, as well as our podcast will come out Sunday if came out a day later, because our podcast channel production was down on Sunday last week. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we try. And then we'll be producing four shorter segments through next week as well. So if you don't have a long attention span, you can get it in short bits next week as well. So
wonderful.
But I want to thank the Learning Disabilities Foundation of America for partially funding our broadcast, and also for viewers like you that donate on our website. And we do have our brand new website up. It's been up for a couple weeks now, and it's very colorful and interactive. So definitely check that out at spedhomeschool.com. And let's keep the conversation going, everybody. We do it all week long on our Facebook support group, which you can ask to join.
Fabulous.
And it is just for parents who are homeschooling special needs children or considering. And we've got a lot of moderators on there and very experienced parents. I think we just hit 1,600.
Oh, congratulations. That's fabulous.
Last week or yesterday. So yeah, it's a growing community and it's people from all over the world. So thanks, everybody. We'll see you again next. Oh, and next week I am interviewing Tori White from the CLC Network, and we're going to talk about inclusive and adaptive bridge building for places of worship and how you as parents can speak to your places of worship about the needs that you have. And so we're going to focus on that. I know we talked a little bit about that tonight, Elaine, but we're going to go into it even more next week as we finish our segment. Yeah, as we finish our segment this month on helping your child spirit, which is so important. So, all right. Well, thanks again, everybody. Thank you, Elaine.
Thank you.
And
my joy.
See you all next week. Yep.